It's Tuesday, April 16th, and his most important constituency is about to be narrowed down to 12 people. We start here. Donald Trump's hush money trial begins in New York.
He was engaged with his lawyers. He occasionally had his eyes closed as if in thought.
We go inside court as jurors are asked if they can be impartial in this case. The Pentagon prepares for Israel's response in Iran.
We shot down these drones and missiles, but this is not over.
Why U.S. officials are telling Israel, we're not helping. And a phone scam turns deadly.
The male on the phone was trying to get money from you, and she was knocking on the door at the same time?
Yeah.
Now, the guy who picked up the phone is being charged with murder. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. The concept of American justice is that no one is above the law. If you're accused of committing a crime, you'll go before a jury of your peers, a pretty random assortment of people from the community who will hear both sides and make a judgment. So imagine what it would be like to show up for jury duty and be informed the man sitting at the defense table, in your case, will be Donald Trump, and that you might be part of the first criminal trial against a former U.S. president ever. That was the scene yesterday in Manhattan as jurors began arriving at a New York courthouse for the case known as the People of New York State versus Donald J. Trump. ABC senior investigative correspondent Aaron Katursky was in the room for all this. He's outside the courthouse now. Aaron, a lot to get to here. First off, though, what was it like when Trump showed up for this trial?
We've seen him in courtrooms before. Court appearances are now fully woven into his political strategy. So when he left Trump Tower, there was a wave. When he got back, there was the fist bump. We saw him stern-faced, knowing exactly where the cameras were when the photographers were allowed in for a minute at the start before the judge took the bench. But otherwise, the customary bombast that you see in the hallway really subsides. He's a defendant at the defense table, and he was engaged with his lawyers. He occasionally had his eyes closed as if in thought. Sometimes he would tug on the sleeve of his attorney, Todd Blanche, to get his attention if he heard something maybe he wanted his defense attorney to respond to. And at one point, the defense attorney seemed to tap Trump on the arm as if to say, okay, I got it. So he is following along when potential jurors were answering from a 7-page questionnaire. Trump held the questionnaire in one hand and flipped through the pages with the other as the potential jurors went through the responses.
Well, and even before the jurors themselves heard from him, even before the jurors were even being selected and argued over, they had some pretrial hearings that actually people were not necessarily expecting. And this was probably some of the newsiest stuff of the day. I mean, who came out ahead in terms of some of these rulings?
It cut both ways, Brad. On one hand, the prosecutors are going to be allowed to call Karen McDougal, the former Playboy model, who has said that the National Enquirer paid her hush money in order to keep quiet about her alleged sexual encounter with Donald Trump that he denies. But the judge also said prosecutors are limited in what they can do with the Access Hollywood tape, the one on which Trump is heard boasting about grabbing women. The judge said prosecutors can quote from it, but they cannot play the tape from the jury. He said that having the jury hear that tape and Trump's own voice would be extremely prejudicial.
And one of the things we've been talking about so much with this criminal trial is how non-negotiable it is that you be there, right? How much that will eat into the former president's campaign time. I mean, did we get a better sense of exactly how intensive this is going to be?
Anytime the jury is there, the former president needs to be in court as well. The judge made that clear. So if there's something outside the jury's presence, some kind of hearing, perhaps Trump can skip that. But by and large, the judge fully expects that Donald Trump is going to be in court. And that conflicted with a request from his attorneys. And this seemed bound to happen, given how the defense has complained that the trial is getting in the way of the campaign trail over the next several weeks. Trump wanted to attend the U.S. Supreme Court arguments when he is going to argue next week about presidential immunity. And the judge said it is a big deal to argue before the U.S. Supreme Court, but he said being a criminal defendant on trial in New York is also a big deal, and he expects Trump to be here.
Well, and so then in the afternoon, kind of the real stars of the show showed up, which is the potential jurors, right? This huge jury pool that they're now going to try to sift through. I mean, what did we learn about the cross-section of people and sort of, I guess, what prosecutors and defense are going after here? Because you're not going to find people who just haven't heard of this defendant.
Yeah, the issue isn't, Brad, whether you've heard of Donald Trump. Who hasn't? He is the, you know, one of the most famous people on the planet. The issue is whether you can be fair and impartial. And there was one woman, she's in her 30s. She lives in Harlem. She works at retail. And she answered yes to a question on the questionnaire that asked whether she had strong views about the former president that could interfere with her ability to be fair and impartial. And the judge excused her right away. But there was one guy, a bookseller from the Upper West Side, who said that he believes everyone, a sitting president, a former president, a janitor, is entitled to be in court, and no one is above the law. And so he was allowed to stay on the jury pool. And what an interesting cross-section of people, Brad, who showed up with their jury summons to court. The oncology nurse, the bookseller from the Upper West Side, a woman who works at Bloomingdale's, someone who works as an attorney who said his wife is pregnant with the couple's first child, and none of them said that they put Donald Trump at the center of their lives. Nobody had read his books. Nobody said they attended one of his rallies. Nobody said they attended a rally anti-Trump either. These are people, ordinary folks who have jobs, who have lives, and who potentially could be asked to sit in judgment of their former president.
Yeah, very different than sort of the crowds that gather outside these courthouses. And yet this cross-section you're referring to, probably a better indication of how most Americans have been dealing with this throughout the years. All right, Aaron Katursky from Outside Court, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, when you launch 300 explosives, you don't get to be the one to call a truce the next day. What Israel and Iran are planning after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This morning, the world continues to wonder if Iran's massive air assault on Israel this weekend will be seen as payback or escalation. Because if it's the former, if Israel treats this as retribution for a strike against Iranian military officials earlier this month, well, that can be that. Everyone can move on, especially since virtually all of Iran's missiles were intercepted. But if that's not how Israel sees it, if they decide this is a step way over the line from the Iranians, well, then you'd expect a military response and the fallout that comes with it. Let's check in with ABC's chief global affairs correspondent, Martha Raddatz. Martha, you've been working your sources since the moment this was beginning on Saturday. I guess as we look back at just the attack itself, what details stick out to you about it and the response from the Israelis and the Americans?
I think what is remarkable about this is not only the fact that they
managed to disable or shoot down all of those drones, almost all of those drones and missiles, but the coordination it took. I think, you know, you had the head of CENTCOM going to Israel just before these strikes started. And I'm sure what he was doing is trying to coordinate with the allies who helped out, trying to coordinate with Israel. I mean, just imagine what the sky looked like that night. You saw some of those drones, you saw some of those missiles, you saw the interception, but what you really never saw was the fighter jets, dozens of fighter jets, U.S. and Israeli fighter jets. Everybody had to coordinate. We had U.S. ships at sea in the Mediterranean, the Red Sea, all the while sharing data with one another so they don't shoot each other down, but tracking these missiles all along the way, sharing this radar data, sharing everything. But up in the skies that night, it was pretty amazing what they were able to coordinate and in the end, very successfully get rid of those missiles and drones.
So with that success in mind, I guess the big question is this over from Israel's point of view?
Absolutely not. Mm. And a senior U.S. official I spoke to said, look, the world may be celebrating the fact that we shot down these drones and missiles, but this is not over. It is not. And the U.S., according to the senior U.S. official, is quite certain Israel will respond in some way.
Iran, the number one global sponsor of terror, has exposed its true face as the destabilizer of the region and the world. And now, right now, is when the world must stop ignoring Iran's crimes and take action.
And this is something they've prepped for a very, very long time.
Right.
Israel knows exactly what they would do in an attack on Iran. The question is, how big an attack? I think the U.S. is comfortable with the fact that it would be, or maybe not comfortable, but they believe that what the targets would be would no doubt be military facilities. They don't believe that Israel would go further than that. But even that is very, very worrisome to the U.S.
Yeah, what does that mean for the Biden administration? How is the White House handling this relationship, I guess, right now?
The White House, as you know, and they've been public about this, that President Biden has talked and hopes that Israel understands they've already had a victory in a sense, that there was no grave damage from Iran.
While the United States does not seek escalation, we will continue to take all necessary action to defend Israel and U.S. personnel.
But for the Israelis, you know, Iran hit their soil. It wasn't hitting any place else or something. I mean, and it would be the first time Israel hit Iranian soil. But President Biden has been clear with Prime Minister Netanyahu trying to say, look, please don't overdo this. Please, please be calm about this. You've already got a win on your hands here. But they just don't know. And the real concern is how Iran will then respond.
If the U.S. initiate military operation against Iran, its citizen, or its security and interest, Iran will use its inherent right to respond proportionately.
And that is why the U.S. will not involve itself in any sort of offensive action with the Israelis. Defense, they're okay. Offense, forget it.
That's interesting. Okay, that's a helpful delineation. And then even if Iran says, like, we're going to stand down if you'll stand down, as you said, very likely that Israel's like, no, this is not over. But even if Iran did stand down, that doesn't even mean it has all these proxies around the region. It doesn't mean they would stop firing at Israel, right? So does that mean you're going to continue having these sorts of, like, provocations, at least, whether Iran claims them or not?
I think you will, no matter what, because that isn't about Iran and Israel. That is about specifically the war in Gaza. Mm. So those proxies will more than likely continue to fire missiles and drones.
As you said, not over, especially when you consider the war in Gaza. All right, Martha Raddatz in Washington. Thank you so much.
You bet, Brad.
I don't know about you, but I'm continuously getting texts from unknown numbers asking stuff like, hi, are you interested in a job? Or maybe even, are we still meeting for dinner tonight? This is not someone I've actually met. It is someone trying to initiate a conversation, often with some kind of scam in mind. Texts and calls like this can be really annoying, but recently in Ohio, we saw how high the stakes can be when a scammer is able to make inroads with victims.
So the male on the phone was trying to get money from you, and she was knocking on the door at the same time?
Yeah.
This went beyond money and ended up with a woman being killed ABC's Alex Perez has been following this. Alex, what happened here?
Yeah, Brad, this is just one of those really unbelievable stories where this is scam led to a fatality and led to a situation that I just don't think a lot of people would have predicted. So both people involved here, police say, were victims of the same scam artist. Now, according to police, 81-year-old William Brock had been receiving a number of phone calls over several days, allegedly saying that a relative was incarcerated and the caller was demanding $12,000 to bail this alleged incarcerated relative out of jail. On the morning of the shooting, March 25th, police say the scam artist called Brock and told him that a driver was coming by his South Charleston, Ohio home to pick up the package with the money. Shortly thereafter, arrives Uber driver Lolitha Hall, who police say had no idea what was going on. She simply picked up a fare for this Uber ride to pick up a package. All of this was actually captured on Lolitha Hall's dashboard camera.
Stop. Stop. Or I'll call 911.
She was confronted by Brock, who was armed with a handgun.
Nope, you're not leaving.
Not knowing what exactly was going on, she tried to escape and get to safety. Police say he took her cell phone, and as she tried to get in her car, he shot her three times, and she later died.
Wait, and so this is so bizarre, because I'm imagining an 81-year-old man getting a call about bail or something like that, and he might think that the person who's driving the car is in on it. I mean, if both people are considered victims of a scam artist, how are law enforcement treating the shooter, I guess?
Well, in this case, the shooter has been charged with murder.
911, what is the location of your emergency?
Officials say he kind of took this into his own hands.
Well, I shot her in the leg first time, and I shot her in the shoulder.
Okay, so you shot her in the leg and the shoulder?
Yes.
He actually confronted her and shot her three times before he called police.
Why did you do that?
Because I was threatened that she was going to come and kill me.
She threatened to kill you?
No, it's the guy on the phone that's been trying to get money out of me.
Authorities say, after reviewing that dashcam video, this driver was not posing a threat to Mr. Brock, and that's why he's been charged with murder.
Right, because it's almost more clear when you see this video from the dash cam. The guy is basically holding this woman at gunpoint. She's terrified. She's crying out for help. He's white, she's black, for whatever that's worth. And then he shoots her non-fatally multiple times. She's immobile, and he shoots her again. So clearly it looks above and beyond. He's pleaded not guilty. Do we know anything about the person who even placed the call in the first place, by the way? Is that person even around?
So when officers responded to that shooting and they were at William Brock's home, the phone was ringing off the hook, they said, and an officer answered that phone, and it was actually, they believe, the scam artist who was calling to inquire about the money that he had been expecting. And that officer tried to arrange a meeting with the alleged scam artist, and the scam artist told the officer, sure, I'll meet you there at this time. But of course, that scam artist never showed up. And then one other interesting detail here, Brad, authorities have been trying to trace this phone number that had been calling Mr. Brock over and over the course of several weeks. And that phone number was traced to Canada, but unfortunately, officials believe it's a burner phone, so it's not really leading them to any suspects at this time.
Well, and Alex, I guess I just keep coming back to, if you have these calls happening, regardless of who the people on the other end of the lines are, the caller, the scammer, is amping the stakes up so high, right? We've heard of other scammers using AI-generated voices that sound like the voice of your kids, right? So you get the person so scared and vulnerable. What do authorities say people should do about it?
Yeah, Brad, it's really unbelievable the number of calls and text messages that people are receiving these days.
AI scams that actually mimic people's voices.
All of a sudden I hear say, mommy's bad men have me, help me, help me, help me.
A lot of times these scam artists will try to pull on emotional strings with people, tell you it's a relative or a family member or someone that you care about. And unfortunately, it works. In many cases, as we've seen, people fall victim to this. authorities are just reminding people over and over that if it sounds suspicious, it probably is. And also reminding people that, you know, the court system, police officers and other officials will not call you and demand money. If someone is calling you and demanding that you hand over, deliver money, something is wrong and you should probably call police right away.
Really disturbing story here. Uber, by the way, says they're cooperating with law enforcement on all this. Alex Perez, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, I was trying to figure out why I haven't been sleeping all night. Then it dawned on me. One last thing is next.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And one last thing. I'm no scientist, but I'm pretty confident in saying there is a direct link between how much I sleep and how pleasant I am to be around. Well, if everyone's like that, bad news for us all, because surveys now show Americans sleeping less than ever. Yesterday, Gallup put out a new poll showing that only about a quarter of Americans are getting the recommended 8 hours of sleep per night. The majority say they get 6 or 7 hours, 20% say they get 5 hours or less. The nice thing about Gallup is they've been asking this question for decades, so we can track it over time, and we are getting less sleep than Americans did in 1990 or 2000, let alone compared to 1942, when even during a war, more than half the country was getting its 8 hours of shut-eye. What's extra interesting about these numbers is who is affected most. Women are significantly less likely to say they feel like they're getting enough sleep compared to men. Young people are less likely to get a good night's sleep than older folks. And in the same poll, these are the exact groups who say they're experiencing more stress than just a few years ago. We're talking about women, particularly younger women. And this isn't a recent thing, either. The stress numbers have been rising steadily since 2003. Part of this could be the lopsided expectations of young moms versus young dads. Some of it could be due to the digital revolution over the last two decades. Like, when is a young professional truly away from work? Or, for that matter, social pressures. The one thing we know is, study after study shows people who get a good night's sleep are much likelier to say they are happy in their lives. So, get some Z's, please. Kid you not, my wife was talking in her sleep the other night, and the words coming out of her mouth were, "I can't sleep." Like, that seems indicative of the problem here. We're even thinking about how we can't sleep when we're asleep. And by the way, this is what podcasts are good for, you guys. You don't need to wake up just for us. You can sleep in. We'll still be here ready for a download when you're ready. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.